Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. It's a butter egg made from plants. Bring more customers in your doors with Just Egg. Start with a free sample at ju.st/hrn.
This week on Meat and Three, we rethink surplus by exploring how innovators are promoting sharing mindsets and responding to excess in creative ways.
The whole life cycle of food would be the third largest greenhouse gas emitter behind China and the United States if it were a country.
You know, in the age of COVID, where a lot of those institutional processors did grind to a halt and a lot of farms had to dump milk in Pennsylvania, even while supermarket cases were bare, the organic market stayed strong.
They source all of these ingredients, they do all of this work, and then they just boil it for a few minutes and then they throw it away.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z. I'm your host, Aaron Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
And today, it's all about moles, all right? We're going to demystify them. We're going to do our best to make sure that all of you guys out there who are lovers of the wonderful, iconic sauce from Mexico is going to be able to know the nuances, what it contains, how to use it. Hopefully, we'll be able to touch upon some of its cultural significance. It's something that's very special. A lot of people love, but I think do not know enough about. And today we're extremely blessed to have two people that I really admire and really respect and know for a long time. We have a mother-son team joining us today, which is wonderful because we've been kind of on this trend as of late. So really excited about that. Joining us today, we have, of course, the genius, Susana Trilling. She's a chef, teacher, author in Oaxaca. She's also the director of Seasons of My Heart Cooking School in Oaxaca. She has been probably one of the biggest ambassadors for the cuisine of Oaxaca that I know. She moved down there in 1988. She's continued to live there and promote the culture and food. And she's just an absolute resource and gem. So I'm very delighted to have Ms. Susana here with us. And then alongside her, we have the legacy, the young man that's taking sort of the reins. And we have Kaylin Ulrich, of course. And I know Kayla for some time because I met him through Jonathan Waxman. And we've known about each other and when he was chefing over at Bajo Sexto in Nashville. And now he's taking the reins. No pressure, just working with Thomas Keller. No big deal. He's the chef over at La Calenda in Napa Valley, which is getting rave reviews, and the food is just unreal. And Kaylin is just one of these super talented young chefs that's making sure that our food is being preserved and cooked the right way. And just we're delighted to have both of you. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Bienvenidos.
Y me da mucho gusto, ¿no? Thank you.
Yes. And I think what we should start really quickly, because, you know, I think we have all different kinds of interpretations of what the mole really means and how it is a metaphor for, you know, one's life, right? So, Mom, when you started, you know, what was your first impression of, or how would you define
mole? Well, I mean, with all the research I've done, I finally have come down to what I think is the best definition. It's a pureed sauce with a thickener of some kind. And it could be nuts, it could be tortilla, it could be masa, it could be bread. And also it has aromatics usually, but not always. And sometimes it has spices, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it has herbs and sometimes it doesn't. The thing is that important that it's a main dish sauce. In pre-Hispanic times, it was served on its own with no protein. It was usually served ceremoniously in bowl. And on one hand, and tamales and tortilla on the other, and that was it, you know. But now, of course, it's usually served with some kind of protein, though not always. So we can take it from there. So maybe, Susana, you could tell us what your favorite mole is, with that description, I guess.
Okay, with that description, because I have a little different point of view on what mole is, but...
Tell me.
Okay, so my point of view on mole is that it's a mixture or concoction, and it comes from the verb moler, which means to grind. And by grinding, originally it was ground on the metate, but even guacamole is avocado mixture. And so we use mole here in Oaxaca very loosely. Like we could say like a bean mix, we say, tráeme the mole de frijol. Like we use it as a name of a mixture of things. But I also think what is more commonly known as mole is the sauces that you're saying. And I agree with all that. But I think one of the most important things is you shouldn't taste one ingredient over the rest. It should be like a harmonious sauce, like that actually comes out with its own personality. You know what I'm saying? So I think if you can really taste the cinnamon and the mole, it's like the cook has messed up and put too much cinnamon in there. Like it should really, and so we do it through technique and the different ingredients that's a whole other thing that we'll probably get into, but that's what I think. So, because I really think that it really started before the Spanish came, I read the Florentine codices and they talk about it. It was called mulli, like mulli with two dots over the U. And it was, they just took like the dried chilies and seeds and wild garlics and ground everything. And then they made paste balls, dried them in the sun, like in Sicily, like in the tomato sauce, tomato paste. They dried it, and then when the feast days came, they would reconstitute that with whatever protein, because they would hunt for the feast days, and they would cook them in these ollas so they could actually chew the meat and then use that broth to reconstitute the mole. And to answer your question, my favorite mole is chichilo.
So we'll get into that description, but I think it's very important to this, the fact that they all don't have chocolate. Because I think that's one of the big misconceptions, because people even call it the chocolate sauce.
Right, right. And I agree with that, because I think because of the notoriety of having chocolate in a savory dish, although it's much more used now, but I think that's very true, because we have so many moles that don't have chocolate.
Kaylin, how old were you when you were first exposed? I mean, obviously because of your mom, but from very little. But when's the first time that you started to think that I can attempt the mole, I can understand some of its nuances and its complexities? Like, do you remember that first moment? Because I remember the first time I went to Oaxaca. In my memoir, it's the first part of my, the introduction is my moment of going to Dia de los Muertos and going to the Panteón and seeing mole. And so that it was that profound for me. Do you have a moment like that?
I think I was very, spoiled with the mole, but going to school and then coming back and then going to my mom's house or the cooking school, everybody's making mole like in the cooking class. So I kind of grew up eating it, but my first memory of it, probably the young boy in Oaxaca just eating it in my mom's house. And then the first time we went to La Fiesta del Pueblo, which was in San Lorenzo, Cacautepec, it's this process that takes 3-4 days, just all the señoras making mole, and then everybody's having a huge party, and you get to sit down, tortillas, arroz, maybe a little piece of chicken, and you're just eating this mole that just took forever, and it's just like so deep, you know, and it's just the way they do it. And then you go to a different pueblo and they add completely, might be almost the same one, but it has secret ingredients or ingredients that you will never think of. Like you go up the mountain and they put ginger in their mole or apples. And you have no idea. And then they're like, oh, ginger is actually it helps with digestion. It's good for all this stuff. Todo eso is like, you just see all small little villages around next to each other, completely different, you know, from all the cooks. But going back to that, I think, when I was growing up, it's eating the mole in La Casa de Mi Mamá, I was like all the time. And now, unfortunately enough, when I make it, I have when I go and go for taste, it just brings me back to that memory of the childhood eating mole, you know? And it's kind of like my foundation kind of guideline, like, okay, I'm close. I know I'm close. So it's a very special thing.
Mom, let's bring up a contentious point, shall we? The idea of the mole poblano versus Oaxaca, okay? Now, I think when most people, especially in the States, think about mole, they think of the traditional mole poblano. And I have a theory, and I'd be interested to hear from our distinguished panel and your thoughts. I think the mole poblano is considered the most popular because there's so many poblanos that have migrated to the States as versus Oaxaqueños. So I just think there's something to be said about that. What are your thoughts?
Go ahead, ma'am.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, here in Oaxaca, we don't go for that story of that the poblanos invented mole, because we know that it was always been made. And I think that they invented their style, because it's very different, not very different, but different chilies, different seasonings, how they thicken. I mean, it really is different. But I think, because of the outreach of the mole poblano, that's why people think of it in their head, because it's probably the first kind of mole they try.
Because probably the one that was made commercially too with Doña Maria.
The Doña Maria, I was going to say that. Exactly. Yeah, because, and that's, I think, you know, so people come and they're surprised when they come, especially when we make Amarillo or other kind of mole in the class, and they're like, what's this, you know, because they consider the mole poblano like what it's supposed to be. But to us in Oaxaca, the mole negro is like the king of moles.
I think that the mole negro is a good place to start, because that's really hard to do without, if you don't have the right chilies and, you know, and to get that black thing, the black color. You know, one woman said to me, queman los chiles, they burn the chilies. And then the thing is that they burn the seeds as well. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to mention when you mentioned ginger is that as a digestive, I have a theory, and maybe we can discuss this, that they burn a lot of the things which produces the carbon, which is also a natural antacid.
That's true.
And Susanna, and then Kaylin, of course, chime in. I mean, we've made at my restaurant in New Orleans the mole negro on occasion, but because it's so hard to get the chihuacle negro, which is so essential to make that mole. Talk a little bit about how distinct some of the chiles are and some of the ingredients and the technique as far as burning the seeds, and which might seem so foreign to some people.
Okay. So it's like way back, like you said, Mom, where everybody kind of had a conception of like mole or you at home, where it's like mole has to have chocolate. And when we start doing the moles, like you have something like mole verde, a little more acidic, you can have such a nuance with it, you can go different ways, and people kind of new to it taking it, and then you're starting to bring in, I don't want to say more complex moles like coloradito, then you go to chichilo, and then like my first time I make chichilo here, and I'm burning the seeds, and everybody's looking at it like, are you aware of what's happening right now? I'm like, yeah, it's normal, they burn, and everybody's kind of like, you really shouldn't be burning stuff in the kitchen. I'm like, chef, it's okay. You trust me. And then, you know, everything burns out and then you soak it. And it's everybody, like, the biggest misconception of people that I think they have is that Mexican food is easy to cook. It's cheap. Todo eso. That's a different conversation. But the mole has so much technique. It's so much technique. Just like if you're making a roulade of any sort of French type of cuisine or Asian or anywhere. And in the mole, I mean, you're burning the seeds, you're rinsing it off three times, and you're cooking it for a long time to make sure you achieve that flavor. And it's just something that it's something that we all here in this beautiful panel have the job to have the education here, because it's a big misconception que tienen the Mexican culture, Mexican food. It's just like, it's easy. It should be $2. And it's like, there's so much behind it. It's like a lot of pride in culture, you know?
Yep. Susana, lo enseñaste bien, ¿eh? Fíjate. You taught him well. Look, que todo mal.
Babe, to your point, Chef Aaron, honestly, the chihuacle, I didn't have a lot of chihuacle until I came to California and New York, but it was more, like, when I was in the South, I never came across with it. And now, I still don't come across with it if you don't know a person. Like, si no tienes tu conecte en Mexico, mandame chihuacle. Okay. O si no, I'm a gozi mom. The suitcase is completely stuffed. Are you doing customs? welcome back home. And then
and it's expensive.
It's like when I, the first time I heard about, not chilhuacle, but I heard pasilla oaxaqueño, it was like $50 a pound. You're like,
I know.
I mean, that's very expensive for a restaurant to make it economically. It's kind of like, wow, this is, but it's so special, you know? So chilhuacle negro, where I'm at right now, we're lucky enough to, we have a connection, which is my mom. So we get the chili straight from the source. And it's a great way to still preserve that ingredient that I know, mom, you said about chilhuacle amarillo is extinct, right? Something like that. It's very hard to get.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the amarillo, no?
Okay.
Susana?
Well, the chilhuacle is interesting because it only grows in one microclimate. You know, Oaxaca has more microclimates than any other state in Mexico. And it's like, so this one microclimate where it grows, and now there's like really about two or three people who grow the chili still, who still are doing it because it's something like, well, the young people, they go off and it's a hard crop to grow. And so the chilhuacle negro, now there's more of it. And the price has actually gone down because some chefs, I think it was Ricardo Munoz, Zurita started, maybe with Enrique Olvera, and they started to help some of the farmers get greenhouses to grow the chilhuacle in. So it helped, you know, guarantee the crop more. And then that kind of caught on. They got some kind of beca or something. And then, it seems to be now that there's a good supply of chilhuacle negro. And then the chilhuacle, there's three. There's chilhuacle rojo, negro, and the amarillo. And there's a restaurant in Colorado, I think it's in Aspen or something, where the guy comes every year and he lives in San Juan Bautista, Cuicatlan, and he has somebody grow the chilhuacle amarillo. He dries it in a secret place, and then he takes it all. And there's hardly any chilhuacle amarillo on the market.
Well, if you ever see a chili that is smooth and looks kind of like a bell pepper, well, not a bell pepper, but it's not, doesn't have that wrinkly, you know, texture that a lot of chilies have, you know you found a chilhuacle.
Yeah, they're round. They look like a giant cascabel chili, no? Like cascabel small, but it looks round. But it has a flavor that is so revered. I mean, people pay like $400 a kilo, which is a lot, but people always put it in the mole negro. It's, you know, I mean, some people I'm sure don't because they can't afford it, but it seems like people spring for, you know, a couple in there because it really is symbolic and respect. Like mole negro, I think, commands so much respect because it's made on the most important days of a person's life, like at a wedding or a baptismo or something. And I think that people really go all out for these events. You know, Oaxaca is so steeped in tradition that people really respect that, even if they have to sell, you know, a cow or something. To be the mayor domo of these big fiestas. People go into debt or somebody's working up in the States or something like that, seriously, to have these big parties.
Yeah.
But I think the thing about burning the seeds, okay, so the chilhuacle, they do, and like what they do here when we have, like we produce mole paste as well. You have to do your chilies and then aerate them or else it just will taste so much like smoke because like you were saying, Zarella, with the carbon aspect, like you to create that flavor, like it's like it is so strong, the smell. And then you aerate them like in these canastas and then you would use them. So people will have a party before a fiesta where there is to quemar los chiles. And then all the women, all the comadres, everybody who's all together, the extended family, they will all go and they'll go outdoors to a field. They'll make little, they'll have the comals on three stones. They build the fire and then they'll just burn all the chiles for the fiesta. Could be a lot. And then they do all the chiles black. It's not burning, but it's toasting them very black. And then the seeds are taken out, and then the seeds is what really gives the color. the seeds are toasted.
Yep.
And then they get, when you toast the seeds, all the oil comes up. And then you have to actually torch them. You just get a piece of paper underneath the fire or a piece of leña. You put it on top. The oil catches like that. And then you burn off the oil, or it'll be too hot to actually eat. It would, you know, it. So you burn off that oil, and then it becomes like ash, basically. And that's what, like Kaylin was saying, that I'm happy he says that you have to rinse it like 3 times to get rid of, because you don't want your mole to come out amargo, or so you don't want out
really
bitter. Sorry, you know, that's like a big no-no.
What can people use here if they can't find the Chilhuacle Negro? You know what, I've come up with something that I've been doing, because you know how hard it is to make mole in a blender and then put it through, you know, through a sieve, and you know, a lot of people don't, I would love your opinion about it. I've come up with toasting the chilies until they're black in the oven, but not burned, and then pureeing that, you know, so grinding that, so it's a lot easier to add to the rest of the mixture. It's
as like a powder?
As a powder.
Oh, uh-huh.
Because it makes it easier for people to do it in a home, because you know, most blenders, unless you have a Vitamix, I mean, you'll be there for 3 days, you know, grinding that pin.
Well, I think you bring up a good point about the home cook, and I think it's important to mention, I think, Ms. Susanna, about you go to a Mercado Central de Abastos in Oaxaca City, you go there and what are you gonna find? You're gonna go to a little puesto or stand that's going to have, in essence, all the ingredients to make the moles,
right.
Very traditional. And then you'll also see, paste. Can you talk a little bit about how people can, if they would travel to Oaxaca and they would go to a mercado like Central de Abastos or whichever, or go to your school, how would you find it?
Well, pitch time. Susanna is producing some paste that she's selling now.
Right.
And she's got a whole business, so that's you have to look for them under what brand is this, Susanna?
It's Seasons of My Heart, Seasons of My Heart brand.
And where can people get it?
Well, right now we are at Zingerman's, and we're at a place called Food Related in San Antonio, Texas. And then you can also go to seasonsofmyheart.com. And we have it there. And we also sell a lot to food service. We sell a lot to chefs, because a lot of chefs can't like smoke chilies in their dining, you know, because it'll go out into the restaurant.
Yeah.
It's a good way to get rid of your customers. But, you know, actually,
don't do that.
You know, people, when we have this roof at the ranch, and we always used to burn chilies once a year to get rid of the snakes in the roof. Like burning chilies has there's a lot of different things you can use it for, not just mole.
This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. You can't have plant-based breakfast without a plant-based egg. Just Egg is now the fastest growing egg brand in the United States. Bring more plant-based customers into your doors with easy-to-use Just Egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn. Made from plants, Just Egg is a better egg for you and for the planet. It's healthier, with no cholesterol and less saturated fat. And it's more sustainable. Just Egg uses less water and generates fewer carbon emissions. Most importantly, it's delicious. For our listeners who operate a food service establishment, you can get a sample for free. Head to ju.st/hrn. Just Egg makes a delicious plant-based addition to any menu. It's available as a liquid scramble, great for omelets, frittatas, stir fries, and French toast. There's also frozen, pre-baked, folded version that's ideal for filling breakfast sandwiches or topping salads. Chef Jose Andres called Just Egg mind-blowing, and Bon Appetit says, "So good, I feel guilty eating it." Put the fastest-growing egg brand on your menu. Get a free sample of Just Egg for your restaurant at ju.st/hrn.
This is an opportunity for both of you to please let people know where they can find you and use you as a resource. I know, Kaylin, you're at making so much noise at that restaurant that you're at right now, La Calenda. I can't tell you how many people tell me how delicious the food is. It's a game changer in Napa. And I'm very proud of you. And I know Chef Jonathan Waxman is proud of you. And so how has been the experience? How has people been receiving the food that you're cooking and with the kind of sort of mentoring of TK and Thomas Kelly?
Well, thank you very much, Chef. Lo único que falta es que vengas tú a echarnos unos mezcales. I'm waiting for you, Chef, and you as well, Sarela. Thankfully, it's been obviously the last year has been a couple of challenges on the road, you know, but we opened incredibly busy from the start. Like Aaron said, it's an addition to Napa that I don't think it was here when Chef Keller had the opportunity to open a venue in Yonville. I mean, he already has three restaurants literally in the same street. How are you going to build another one before you start competing with each other, you know? So it's, what do you do? What is not in Yonville? And he saw Mexican food. There's not a good Mexican food in Yonville. And he said, well, that's kind of the idea of him, like, reaching out to myself to see if we open this restaurant. And then when it happened, we opened the restaurant, and it's been a great feedback. But like I said, it's a start of introducing flavors, introducing ways how we eat in Mexico. Our spoon is a tortilla. We eat con las manos. We like to enjoy. It's all about the family sitting down, having a good time when you're eating, in any kind of culture. But in Mexico, more than anything, it's very va pegado al corazón, you know? So, pásame las tortillas, pásame la salsa, all that we're bringing to Napa, and you with the music, the ambience of the restaurant. And at the end of the day, it's the flavors, you know? Make sure you're nurturing. We're nurturing people, you know? People vienen a comer. And TK has been, Chef Thomas has been very, very supportive. And he doesn't come in the kitchen like, oh, I know how to cook Mexican food. He considers himself as a student, which is incredibly humble for the whole kitchen to see that. And then he's just blown up and just very happy to try new flavors. And he hasn't been too, I don't want to say, I expose he's been to Mexico and stuff, but when the Yonville came, it was a great addition that we gave, and we kind of just showed a little bit, a very, very small percentage of what Mexico is. Because Mexico is so vast, and you never say, oh, this restaurant has it all. You know, tienes un poquito, and we have the opportunity to expose a couple dishes. We had when we opened, we had four moles on the menu. We had mole negro, which is the staple. And we, going back to the mole poblano, when we first opened, a lot of people were like, why don't you guys put sesame seeds on it and stuff like that? I'm like, that's a good point. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's like mole poblano, sesame seed. Mole negro, let's keep it traditional. Esto no va con sesame seeds on it. It goes inside, blend it, pero no va de garnish. You know, 50 ways to cook an egg.
So did you learn or help your mother's cooking school, Seasons of My Heart?
Yeah, it definitely helped me a little bit.
And how proud are you, Susanna, of your son?
Oh, I'm so proud. I'm awesome. I mean, when he was born, I held him and I said, this is better than being written up by Gourmet Magazine, which to me was like the pinnacle of my life before that. No, and he was amazing because now during the pandemic, I'm going through like all these old papers, you know, everyone's cleaning out. And I was reading these letters that somebody saved and then sent back to me. And it was like Kaylin was three. We had a bed and breakfast on the ranch. And I was like, oh, Kaylin's so into food. Now he's doing the breakfasts by himself. He's, you know, and I remember he was like three. He'd be on this chair and he'd be like, I can make hotcakes without from scratch, without a recipe. You know, I mean, he was always so into it.
That was my biggest fried chef pancakes. Eh?
No, but I mean, he grew up in it. And then, well, I remember being with you guys, both of you, at an event in the CIA. It was like the Flavors of Mexico event. That's where I first met you guys. And but I would be invited to these food and wine events, like in Austin and everything. And I would take him and his brother Jesse, and they have these little chef coats, and then I would do like a dish, and I'd say, okay, you guys, here's the drill. make this thing and now do 500. And they'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like in their little goros. And, you know, they would be so happy as long as they had Dr. Pepper, you know. I love Dr. Pepper.
I'm very proud.
I have to say I'm very proud. And I was very proud since he started at La Omni. When he was 18, he left.
Yep.
So tell us about your cooking school, because people do go to Oaxaca specifically to go to your cooking school. And I want people to be
able
to.
It's so special.
Yeah, it's really fabulous.
Great.
It's hands-on because we want people to get into the masa and get into the, making the dishes themselves. It's really kind of a culinary experience for people, or a cultural experience, because we take people to the market, or we do chocolate on the metate now. We've done a lot of cheese making. We have like different programs. You can come for a day or you can come for a week. And I also do these 10-day tours to different areas. But it's really, really fun because the big thing about the kitchen, is the education. We have like an hour lecture and then everybody puts the apron on and everybody cooks. But the convivencia in the kitchen, to me, is everything. It's like convivencia is a great word. It means like hanging out together, laughing, having a good time. And that's what I strive for in the classes, for people to have fun, for people to learn, for people to try things. And then everybody, like each team, usually there's teams, and then they can present their dish how they want, or we have a way we present it. But especially when we work with chefs, because we learn so much from them, we're like, how would you present this in your place? And we've learned tremendous amount of things. And we've had lots of people. It's Kaylin's 28?
Yes, chef.
Okay, so I've had the school for 27 years. He was like the party favor. In the middle of the table, he'd be in like this little chair that bounced up and down, and all the women would be cooking and then playing with the baby. And my first classes were for the local Mexican women, teaching them international food. And then I had to learn. I learned and learned, and then people started asking me for cooking class when we had the B&B. So that's how it started.
Wow.
But it's really a lot of fun. Like, it's so delicious too. The food is delicious. A lot of people say it's the highlight of their trip, or, it's some of the best food they've had in Oaxaca. And they create it. So it's really enabling. And that's what I like, because, recipes you can follow. There's like a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then you get to eat the reward. So it's very
They have to learn
fulfilling.
The technique, though. They have to do
technique. We do the techniques. I have a fabulous staff who really have been with me for a while. And they're the local women from San Lorenzo, Cacaltepec, and they're really good. And so we work as a team. We also do some catering events. It's the school. We started in my house. Well, my ex's house, the kid's father, Eric, who's a farmer, and he's an agronomist. I guess you would say more. He grows lots of tomatoes and chilies. And so we started in the school, and then we got the money. I got a PBS show, and the same people with Zarella did with WMHT in New York. And I got the money from Random House because I had a bonus built into my book contract that if the show played in the 50 major cities of the US, I could get a bonus. And that was the bonus. I built the school, and it's like a big temple. We call it the Temple of Good Food because it has a dome. And everybody in the village thought that we found the gold that's supposed to be hidden on the ranch somewhere,
yeah,
and that we built this temple to say thank you.
That's funny.
El Dorado de Mole. Yeah. I love it. And I think, me personally, I think my mom shares the same sentiment. You think about somebody like Diana Kennedy, who came to Mexico many years ago and, is more, I think, of a, of a professor of the food, where you, I think, are a lot more approachable. Not taking away anything from Miss Diana, but I think what you're doing is so beautiful because you're bringing people into your home, and then you're showing them not just one particular style, but many different kinds of techniques and dishes that really exemplify the food. So I just enough respect and kudos to you, Susanna.
Yeah, I mean, I'm first a mom, but I'm second a chef. I mean, and I feel like, and then an anthropologist or all the other things that you have to become to really study a culture and study the food. But it's a great way for people to study the culture of not just Mexico, but in Oaxaca specifically, has such a diverse culture. It's such an amazing part of Mexico. My parents, my grandparents are from Durango and Tampico. But when I came to Oaxaca, mm-hmm. I was like, this is the Mexico I've been looking for my whole life. And then I've been here 32 years or 33 years, something like that. Yeah, because it's so beautiful.
Since 88.
And it's changed, but it hasn't changed all that much in a lot of ways, like the markets and the customs.
Well, because people are so traditional and they keep all the festivals and they participate, you know, and that's a very, like you say, the mayordomo, you know, a lot of these people, there's a tradition where somebody takes responsibility for hosting this huge fiesta. And there used to be one person that would go broke, but what they lost in money, they would gain in prestige. But now nobody can afford to do that with one person. And so a lot of people get together to host this beautiful town fiesta to the patron saint of the town. And that's, they really, really do live the tradition and if fiercely hold on to it, particularly people like in Teotitlán del Valle and I guess everywhere. I mean,
everywhere. And it's so interesting because when I did the PBS show, I had, that was the time when you had to have the book that went with the show. And so people would say to me, mm-hmm. oh, it's so great. You're preserving these recipes before they're lost. And I'm like, these recipes aren't going anywhere. These recipes are here to stay till the end of time. I mean, because this is it shows like the passage of time year by year. It's the way that things are celebrated. It really is such an important part of the life here.
And they say the Oaxaca is the place of the seven moles, but it's really the 700 moles because everybody
has 7 million moles, right?
Yes, everybody has their own version.
Yeah,
everybody has their own version. And like one of the things I remember when Kaylin, I was thinking he was going to say maybe one of these stories, but we spend every year at Day of the Dead. We do these courses all through the year, you know, for people to come and study. But every year we go and celebrate on the 2nd of November in this village called Jalapa de Valle, which is way up in the mountains. And these people, we grew tomatoes with them 28 years ago or something, a really long time ago, maybe 27 or something. And then, so I would take Kaylin. He was, before Jesse was born, we would go up there and have Day of the Dead with them. And they have the muerteros, you know, that everybody dresses up like in these outfits so that the spirits can come through them. And they have to drink a lot of mezcal. And then the spirits will come. And so I took Kaylin with me. And he was like, he didn't want to come home. And he ended up staying like 2 or 3 days up in the mountains. And then finally we had this adopted son and we sent him up on a bicycle to go get him. But it was like, he was like, no, I'm staying. And we're like, okay. He was always very independent. But that, they make this mole with, and they use like a stick. It's called mole de garrote because it has like this stick. It's a carrizo, but that's mm-hmm. how they stir it. And so, but she has like some of the best mole I've ever had in my life. And it's, and I'm not, I think a lot of it, I don't know, the leña, and it's coloradito too. It's not negro, it's coloradito.
Which means like reddish mole.
Yeah, red. Right, that's true. That it means reddish
mole. Not completely red, but kind of reddish.
Yeah, it's kind of this brick red. And that's what we use for also for enchiladas and for the tamales.
You know that in the Isthmus, they also have mole, but there's a dish called revolcado where they put all kinds of meat together with fruits and everything. And they stir it until it becomes a paste. I mean, it's like endless hours stirring. And I said to this woman, Venancia Toledo, do you do the stirring? He said, oh, no, honey. At this age, you know, it's better to, es mejor arrear el burro que cargar la carga. It's better to lead the donkey than to carry the load. So they have other people, you know, stirring the things. And I guess they do the same thing with mole.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's important to mention just for our listeners, the idea of what is mole typically paired with, right? We spoke at the beginning of the podcast about the ceremonial aspect of it, of just simply either a tamal or a tortilla on one hand, the mole on the other, and then kind of, and just tasting that piece of history and that very essential moment, food memory. Now you typically see mole paired with proteins that don't have necessarily a lot of inherent flavor, because you're talking about millennia making mole, so you have wild turkey, right? Duck, chicken, of course. I think it's important for people that, you know, when you're working with such an action-packed, flavorful sauce like a mole, it's not something that you would necessarily pair with fish, for example.
Except for mole verde.
Yeah.
Except for mole verde.
Except for mole verde. But with a few exceptions, is my point. But traditionally, if you have a protein that doesn't have a lot of inherent flavor, perhaps, the mole really brings it up. So just for people at home to understand.
So I'm launching my new website any day now. And we're going to do a page on every episode that we have. And we've mentioned so many things, mole verde, mole amarillo. And it's very hard to cover and for people to remember what the descriptions are of everything, you know, that we speak of in a moment. So we'll have all the descriptions and we'll really welcome you as contributing articles and photographs and all that. So it's very dynamic. And so people get the recipes and people get the information on your school and the information on your line.
And also contact Susanna and Kaylin individually. We'll make sure that everyone has a way to correspond with you guys and use you as a resource as well. Because this is such a vast topic that we could spend three podcasts talking about one particular mole. So I think it's important for everyone that's listening to continue to support and also engage with us and ask questions. I think it's very important.
That's great. And so we're doing Zoom classes now because we haven't had anybody since March 18th. And so we're starting a mole series.
That's wonderful.
Seven classes. And I think we're starting March 25th. And then we're also going to help people because some of the chilies are hard. And like Kaylin said, they're so expensive. We're going to send little packages of the hard to find, like chicozle, chihuacle, like the harder to find chilies, send them to the students, you know, just little packages, not like, but we also do sell to chefs like larger amounts, but we're going to do that. But to try to explore the moles and, you know, going back to the question, wait, I just want to answer the question about the protein, because I think that's pretty fascinating. Because when I've studied around the state, like the one to me, the most versatile is mole amarillo. It's versatile in so many ways, like how you thicken it or what chilies you use or the way that it's made. And I think like in Teotitlan, they make those tamales that are wrapped in corn leaves instead of corn husk with the mole amarillo.
They make a tortilla.
Yeah, they make the tortilla and it's all pre-Hispanic. You know, my friend made it for me on the metate. And you can just see it's like they use like three ingredients and then you can get it much more complex. But to me, the mole amarillo, I've had it with chicken, with pork, and the herb changes. So when it's with chicken, it's with hoja santa. If it's with pork, it's with cilantro. If it's with beef, it's with pitiona. I've had it with iguana. If you go to the coast, we lived on this island. Your father and I lived on this island where he was growing melons in the coast. And everybody was eating these, the iguana mole amarillo tortillas and tamales. But so it could be made with so many things. Plus in the mushroom in the Sierra Norte, where we go mushrooming every year and we do mushroom tours, but they eat it with everybody makes amarillo with hongo.
Oh, wow. With mushrooms. Wow.
Silvestres. Yeah.
And I would say for Aaron's point as well, I think that when a home cook, even a chef or just somebody at home that wants to cook meal for the family and really likes mole, I feel like people shouldn't be intimidated by mole. There's different types of mole. Mole negro, mole poblano, mole chichilo. Yes, that is, I'm going to tell you, me as a chef, a cook, That is very complex, very hard to make, even for people who do it on the regular basis. You know, it's a very complicated bit. There's moles. Not saying that other moles are easier to make, but in a sense, in the States, I've been here 10 years now, and I've lived in a couple states, and I know, not I know, but I've come across with ingredients that you can make mole. I know you can make a mole coloradito. It might be challenging just finding a good Mexican chocolate, but you have all the ingredients to make mole coloradito in the States. Mole verde, you can make it, as of right now, go to the store and buy almost everything. Maybe hojasante is a little challenging to find.
You can use tarragon instead.
Mm-hmm. Or fennel.
Mole amarillo. Mole amarillo, you can make it. Chilcosle amarillo, obviously, you can find, but you can substitute with guajillo, and you're right there. And then, I mean, it's just a lot of moles that if you really want to achieve a mole negro or mole poblano that has 27, 20, and 30 plus ingredients, it might be a project that you want to do for a special occasion, like
over a few days.
Over a few days.
And with somebody with you. Because it's sad to make mole by yourself.
Mom, tell real quickly the story. We lived in an apartment on the Upper West Side. Tell that little story, Mom, when you made mole at the house.
Everybody, then the whole building came down, and, you know, crying because it was just like everybody's eyes were just like totally weeping, and they thought that we were, you know, attacking the building somehow.
Wow. That's a story right there.
We had a horrible landlord, that's why. I don't remember the whole story. I just remember everybody coming down and complaining.
Yeah. You know what's funny?
What?
You know, sorry, what's funny about that? When you say the chilies are used for all these things, the Mayans back in the day when the kids didn't behave, quemaban los habaneros, pull them from their feet, put them in the smoke, and a ver si vas a portarte así mañana en la mañana, cabrón. Like, all right. ya me calmo.
Yeah. I have a story about that from, but this is from Yucatan, I guess, too. I went to see a birthing ceremony there, and you know how they have the little conical huts there on stilts? And there was a young girl having a really hard time giving birth. So this healer came with me, and she took a handful of chile seeds and threw it in her face. And she sneezed so hard that the baby just slid out.
That's old school.
That's a rough way to come into the world.
Exactly.
You still haven't described chichilo. Because, I mean, you said that was your favorite.
Okay. Yeah, I have a hard time breathing the chili. I think chichilo, to me, this is going to sound funny, but, well, it's a stew like mole. It has beef and pork, and it has potatoes, string beans, and chayote. And it also has chihuacle with guajillo. And you burn the seeds on top of a tortilla, of a corn tortilla. And then you burn it, and then you catch it on fire. Then you put it in the water. You rinse the water. But it has all these different herbs and spices. And to me, it tastes like Hungarian goulash. It has kind of more European spices or something. But it's beefy. It has more of a beef flavor. But what I really love about it is on top of the chichilo, we serve it escabeche, which is made with chili de agua and onion, lime, and Oaxacan oregano, and salt.
And escabeche is like a pickled dish.
Pickled chilies, rajas, the strips of chilies with onion. And that goes on top, and that just like brings out the flavor. So amazing. So you have this like beefy flavor with the beef and the pork, and then you have this really bright acidic topping, you know, and I love that. I just love chichilo. And I remember, you know, telling my cooks at the school saying, look, when I die, you know, I don't want mole negro. I want chichilo, because everybody makes mole negro for the funeral. And I'm like, no. And it was really funny because I said it to this woman who was my sous chef, and she's older, and she's like, don't tell me, you know, she didn't want the responsibility. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to tell Jesus, who's like, he's been working with me since he's been 13 years old. And now he's like 30 or something. But So he's in charge and he knows that. So, you know, that's what I want.
So I went to a restaurant that had really good chicharrón, but it was cold. And I said, this is a good proof that good food is even good, you know, when it's cold. It was not supposed to be a compliment, but they took it as a compliment.
Oh, good. That's good.
Well, I think this has been absolutely amazing. I think the idea of mole hopefully has become a lot more accessible and a lot more easier to understand after this conversation. Whereas they say in Argentina, es de charla. I think this has been unbelievable. I hope everyone please goes out and seeks out Susanna Trilling at her wonderful cooking school. Of course, she's a TV hostess, a caterer, a teacher, and her cooking school, Seasons of My Heart cooking school, is in Oaxaca. So please make it a point to
or by Zoom.
Yeah, you
absolutely
can
by Zoom.
Yeah, on the website. We're there.
Absolutely.
You can come.
Yeah, and make a culinary pilgrimage to Oaxaca. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. As Susanna said so eloquently, it has all these beautiful microclimates. You have the beach, you have the sierras, the mountains. You have so much to do there, so much to see, and so much to savor. So please make it a point to go engage with Susanna. Her website or email is susannatrilling@gmail.com. So please feel free to send her an email. I guess I just threw that out there. Sorry, Susanna, if you're going to be inundated. And then, of course, Kaylin, you know, who is between you and Jonathan Zaragoza, these two young hotshot chefs that are carrying the torch, I'm so proud to see this new generation of chefs that are preserving our culture and our food in such a beautiful, smart way. So please look him up, of course, where he's a chef at the beautiful La Calenda in Napa Valley in Yountville. And I think it's really important to go there and give the love and see the food and see his interpretation of the flavors of Mexico, because I think you'll be so surprised and so uplifted by tasting Kaylin's food, because I know it, and I know him, and great people make great food. And we've had two of them here, mother-son team, that has really made this podcast talking about moles such a pleasure. So we thank you. Muchísimas gracias de nuestro corazón. And we're very, very grateful that you took the time.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for the invite so much.
I want to finish with a beautiful little story of Oaxaca. We were up in Mixe country, and they were having a party, and they invited me, you know, to join them. And one of the parents stood up and said, "Hago este ofrecimiento, I make this offering, porque solo no se puede compartir la vida, because alone one cannot share life. Others must be there," and that really embodies the spirit of Oaxaca. And the spirit that you shared with us today was a beautiful, beautiful experience to have you two here and to meet you, Kaylin, and to see you again, dear friend, of so many years. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
We just want to thank Susanna Trilling, of course, and Kaylin Eldridge for joining us today on Cooking in Mexican from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network. Muchísimas gracias.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Entrañas. everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.